It's Dear Instructional Designer, episode 46. Hey everybody, and welcome back to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. This season, we're digging into real projects and breaking them apart to see what makes them work. This episode, we're back with Simon Date and talking about the intersection between web development and instructional design. Simon, you want to say hi?
Hey.
Last episode, Simon talked with us a lot about ADAPT, a free and open source e-learning tool and its particular strengths as he's seen it implemented on his team at King's College London. So if you haven't heard that episode, I'd recommend that you go and check that out. This episode, we're zooming out a bit. I know that one of the things that newbie instructional designers are always looking for is a way to practice the various skill sets of instructional design. I really believe that getting involved in open source projects is one way to do that, and I know that Simon agrees with me. So we're going to focus today on the hows and whys of contributing to open source projects. Simon, to start off, can you explain a little bit about what an open source project is? What does it mean to be open source?
Sure. So I think the main idea of open source is that it's decentralized development, you know, the workings of it is decentralized rather than being consolidated by a single entity. The main principles of it are that it's free for anyone to run and have like an unlimited amount of licenses for. Anyone can kind of study and learn from the software and access the source code and make modifications, adaptations and improvements to it. Without having to inform the original license holder. And the idea of being able to share copies. I mean, there are differences based upon the different types of licenses you have, but this is a kind of general rule, the idea of freedoms.
Yeah, and I want to put this into context for everybody listening. I think I've told this story before, but there was this time I was working at the university and they had this thing that they had created from some third-party vendor. They didn't have access to the tool, and they wanted to make some changes. But, I mean, there was nothing they could do. You know, without access to the original tool, they were up a creek. Now, I was able to, fortunately, sort of go into the back end and make some tiny code changes. But the function and the point of open source, from our point of view, is that sustainability model. I mean, when you leave and somebody else needs to pick up your projects, or if your stuff gets shipped off to somebody else, wouldn't it be awesome if they could just make the changes themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I talked about this last episode, but if you decouple the idea of a software provider being the vendor as well, because they have, it's kind of like a predatory relationship they can have. I mean, this isn't always the case. Obviously, lots of software is
right. Not bashing software, but yeah.
I'm not kind of like, you know, there's lots of amazing software you use, but for stuff like products that you use every day for work and these kind of things, you need to be quite cynical about the motivations. And I think so anyway.
Yeah.
Not because I'm a cynical person, but just because of these stories that you hear about these kind of issues that occur.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think part of the job as an instructional designer is sort of looking out for the best interests of your organization or your department or whatever. And, you know, if you have a situation that you might run into where all of your data belong to the vendor, you know, it's kind of, you know, that's scary in a way. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So could you talk to us a little bit about some open source project examples and I guess a little bit about their business models? I mean, it could be kind of, you know, like, well, what's the whole point of view of a open source project? They're not getting paid for it.
I mean, there's a lot of cynicism towards the idea of why do we need to like flip over the table and start again and say, these old ways are bad and whatever. It sounds a bit you know, apocalyptic. I'm kind of like saying everything's wrong, but I mean, there's lots of really sustainable business models for for open source projects. Moodle's obviously probably the biggest open source project in the instructional design e-learning world. Mm. It's a free open source LMS that anyone could download and set up themselves. But development costs are covered by the idea that most people aren't going to have the skills to do absolutely everything they need to, or maybe don't have the skills at all. And they want someone who can, you know, work with within their organization to set up this tool. So Moodle offers a partnership scheme where they offer, you know, promotion and say, these are authorized vendors who can provide services to you and are of a good quality. And then in return, these partners pay Moodle a fee for the cost of development. And Moodle has a, you know, a full-time staff. Mm-hmm. They have their own incorporated entity. So that's how their business model works. And everyone is Adapt, obviously, I've talked about before. Mm. It is a bit of a younger project. So it hasn't really had the time to become an incorporated unique entity. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's something which is shared between the collaborators of the project. So there's about 8 or 9 companies that some of their staff's time to work on the project. And they understand the value of that, that making a more stable platform is going to, you know, improve things. And they may offer to work on certain new features as they see demand for them from their clients. Hmm. But it's a bit of a different business model because there's no incorporated, because there hasn't been a chance to set that up yet. But I think as these open source projects get bigger and bigger, that obviously I think in the demand for like a accountability and for independence is quite big.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it's interesting to think about how these things pay for themselves, because I guess one of the worries would be that it's going to, you know, sort of up and go away.
Yeah, of course. And if, you know, if no one's being paid to work on it, then it's just going to be some like part-time, you know, you want good developers who are paid, you know, who are professionals to be working on your project.
Yeah.
You obviously, there are projects which are people doing as a hobby in their spare time, but if you want it to be a high quality product, then you're likely to want several, you know, professionals working on it.
Yeah. And so we should say that, you know, these two examples that you've given are in that sort of high quality category, not likely to go away soon.
Yeah. I mean, what was OPIA like? Is that a... do you know if there's professionals working on that or is it?
Yeah. So OPIA, just to sort of give you guys some background, Simon and I were talking about this a little bit before. OPIA is an open source learning platform that sort of seeks to replicate that one-on-one tutor experience. And it is sort of a hobbyist project, I guess you would say. I don't think there's anybody getting paid for it. But a lot of the people who are working on it are professionals. It was started by, I think, a couple of Googlers in their 20% time. So there are people who know what they're doing. And from my point of view as a contributor, I just have to say I think they have created an awesome, welcoming community. And they're doing just a lot of stuff to make sure that maintenance of the code base and maintenance of the project as a whole is just really, really good. So it's not a messy, ugly project. I think it's working super well.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's lots of different business models.
Yeah.
It's all on a case-by-case basis, really, of which way they go.
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the reasons why I'm so excited to have this episode is that, again, newbie instructional designers are always thinking about, you know, what can I be doing? And I find myself pushing people towards open source projects, but maybe I'm not articulating, you know, exactly how you can help, because I think people hear open source and they think, oh, you need to be a coder to do that. So, I mean, talk to us a little bit about ways that you can help an open source project.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think, like you said, open source, there's this kind of stigma of, oh, you've got to be a coder, you've got to know all these things. But
right.
I almost think that's like the complete opposite of the truth, because most software projects are created by developers. And as they grow, they realize their skill sets are very limited.
Mm.
And if you're someone like an instructional designer who has skills in writing, then you'd be a great asset in creating documentation or tutorials.
Mm.
Or if you're a UI designer, graphic designer, you can really help with those, you know, setting up web design templates and doing mock-ups of what the next version of the software could look like.
Mm.
So it's just a very easy way to get your foot into the door.
Mm.
You don't need to write, you know, you don't need to interview to help an open source project.
Right.
You don't need to be like, you know, prepare all these things. You just need to have like passion and show that you can make some kind of contribution. Often if a project's set up well, there'll be like a good roadmap and a good way for new people to kind of get themselves started on the project.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully these kind of resources can give you an idea of something you'll be interested in helping in, like maybe a new feature that you think is really cool and you want to help, or just generally like something that you could do to help. And someone from the open source team should be able to answer your emails and help you get started, really.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned tutorials, because I have to say, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But, that's, you know, an Adapt or a Moodle or an Opia, yeah, creating tutorials for something like that, absolutely. They would love
that. Yeah, of course. Yeah, like the tutorials you did for Adapt was really cool. I know, I saw them and I thought like it would be really useful if I was learning it for the first time.
Yeah.
And exactly, I'm sure that was something you just did. It probably took you a few hours, and you know, you don't need to like commit a huge amount of time to do
right.
these kind of things. As long as you have the passion for it and you think that there's an audience, then why not just do it and see what happens?
And I mean, yeah, but the sort of the other benefit is that this is a real world project, you know, like you're helping
absolutely, real
people.
It's, you know, amazing experience.
Like, yeah.
I mean, when I applied for my current job, I think that was the main thing I was leading on, was some of my open source contributions, and I think it really impressed my employers.
Mm.
And being junior, like I remember at university, I was kind of playing around with a few open source projects. Yeah, if you're that stage of your career, I think it's just the best way to go, because I feel like software is more and more going to move towards this model anyway.
Mm.
So if you can prove that you're like, if you understand how it works and you're really on board with it, it's going to really help you in the long term.
Yeah. And you know, the more we're talking, the more I'm thinking about other benefits, because I see a lot, or I get asked a lot questions like, have you ever worked on a remote team?
And yeah, exactly.
Open source is absolutely that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like we have, we have group calls once a week with people from America, from Europe and from India. And we've like kind of got this really strong friendship amongst all these people from these different countries. And I don't know, it's just, it kind of makes you feel like it's like a third, like you have your friends, you have your work friends, and then you have like your open source community. It's like an extra, it's like, maybe that's a bit too far, but, but the idea of like, I don't know, I think it's like a really cool thing to be part of. And, you know, if you can find enough interest and do it professionally, then obviously from a company who's obviously invested in open source and is hiring people based upon their knowledge or to make contributions based upon their behalf, then it's just a really cool, pretty cool thing. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of that. And I mean, to everybody listening, just check out open source. And Simon, I know that you had a resource that you wanted to point us to. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, hopefully you'll put it in the show notes. It's absolutely. Just a guide on how you can get involved. And it's written towards a non-coder. Like it's written to anyone who has any skills and just wants to know what open source is and understand more about what kind of thing, like, you know, finding a project and then just how they can use their skills, how they can learn from mentors. And yeah, I think it's a really good resource. So I'd recommend reading that.
Absolutely. So we'll have that in the show notes, along with links to the three projects we talked about today, Moodle, Adapt, and Opia. Obviously, there are more projects than that out in the world, so feel free to do your own exploration. But Simon, I want to thank you again for joining me today. This was like a really awesome episode, and I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of value out of it.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
Yeah, last but not least, where can people catch up with you?
On Twitter, I'm at Simon Date. So say hi there, I guess.
Absolutely. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah.